Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is June the 11th, 2020, and today I wanted to talk about some real-life case studies and examples of how I've helped athletes use mental imagery, and you can also bring in your case studies and your examples as well. I welcome them, and so welcome Matt and Dave and others that are listening on the call too, and so be thinking about any questions or comments that you have as well. I've worked with many Olympians and Olympic gold medalists over the years with visualization and with mental training in general, with coaching, and as well as people in all different athletes in all different sports at all levels and ages, from 9 years old all the way up to probably 80 years old. And so, it's great that we can work in all kinds of fields here with, all different sports. And so I wanted to talk about different ways that you could use imagery for success in sports and business and life, and provide some real good examples here, and how you can use imagery for so many different things, just about anything in life. Rehearse an upcoming event, replay one of your best performances in the past and anchor that. Make difficult decisions about things. Be able to recover from quickly from a low point or disappointment or loss, and also use visualizations in many ways, not just with talking or an audio, but you could bring in poems, songs, some sort of inspiration, slides, all those things as well. And also using visualization for dealing with, say, a difficult opponent or comparing, all those kinds of things too. So I wanted to share some examples there, improving self-confidence too, and helping athletes focus. These days they're having real difficulty focusing, of course, with so much going on with COVID-19 and the George Floyd situation and all the protests. And then, this other group of people that are coming in and doing violence and looting, and that's affecting all of us in all of our cities here. First, I just want to ask you, check in, do you have any questions or thoughts on what's going on now, or how you've used mental imagery, or things that you'd like me to address? Dave, I know you're there too, Dave and Matt. Or you can, if you're on mute, you can just press, I think it's star 6 to take yourself off mute. But just wanted to check in to see if you had any questions or comments to address here.
I would just say that the more examples, the better, in terms of, kind of my training, what I'm looking to do. I kind of mentioned that in my assessment previously, so I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, great. Yeah. Go ahead with that. And I just wanted to, talk a little bit about visualization and imagery in general. First, that, of course, images are, mental representations of our experience, and so, it's a really powerful mode. It's a, verbal language is the most common way that we communicate with the external world, but imagery or visualization is a powerful means of internal communication with ourselves, and it can be, create mental images or sensory images for the purposes of, enhancing your own training and your life, and use those positive mental images to affect how your body responds to any situation. And so just like we work out our bodies, we need to also exercise the mind. And I always like to say mental training is like taking your brain to the gym. We want our bodies to have many different speeds and gears, the same way we need our minds to be more flexible so we can shift from those negative to more positive gears. So mental imagery is a powerful way of doing that. And oftentimes we're using mental imagery all the time, whether we know it or not, and usually we're replaying the negative stuff, the screw-ups, the embarrassing situations, or the things where we messed up, and we replay those over and over in our mind, and then the body just follows those mental instructions. And so what you can do is help athletes to, you know, change that, create a new movie in the mind, or turn, that's always going to be there, those negative images, but we need to figure out a way to learn from that. And so one example I wanted to give first is with a 14-year-old swimmer I've been working with, and she was having difficulty with her coach, and this happens so frequently where coaches are, just don't give enough positive feedback, or don't give any negative or any positive encouragement, and are just she said to me, you know, my coach is yelling at me and swearing at me, and it's just bringing me down, and he does that with the rest of the team too, and I he's 14 years old, and it's just really hard to work out when you're being degraded like that. And I, so we talked about it, and I said, let's talk about how you could have a conversation with him about that. And so that involved a powerful kind of visualization exercise. I think she said what she'd like to say. I said, first, let's just do the raw kind of unedited version of what you want to say. And she said, she said that. And then I said, she said, well, I just want to say, you know, this is hurting me, or I can't focus if you're just constantly yelling at me, swearing at me. And we talked about how to say it in a, you know, use the sandwich technique of being able to say something positive first, like, I know you want our team to do well and to win, and we're all working together. It's something positive at the beginning, and that's the bread of the sandwich, and then the meat of the sandwich is the difficult part that you want to say, and then finish up with something positive. So saying, you know, this is when I don't appreciate you yelling at me or swearing at me. It really makes me feel bad and perform not as well as you'd like, and here's how I'd like you to speak to me or give more positive feedback. And she talked about what she wanted to say, and then we kind of wrote out a script, and then I had her visualize that, kind of visualize talking with her coach and being able to feel more powerful and feel really assertive. And, you know, it's tough. I said, you know, you're putting... It takes a lot of confidence to do this because you're putting yourself on the line. You don't know what's going to happen afterward. And she said she was afraid he might kick her off the team or change or lower her position or something. And I said, this is really good training for, I mean, really, it's like harassment in the workplace. Your workplace is the pool, is working out with these athletes, and you're, being harassed by your boss, basically your coach, and so this is a really important time to stand up for yourself. And so we did a visualization around that, and I took her words, what she said. I wrote those down, and then took her through a visualization of being able to say to the coach after a workout, "Hey, can we chat for a few minutes?" and then be able to say. Visualize saying what she wants to say, and I said, you know, visualize yourself standing tall and your posture. All those things mean a lot, convey a lot, and be able to convey that you are confident, that you are doing your best to communicate to him in a thoughtful, respectful way. And also visualize your voice, the tone of your voice being really powerful and strong, and yet in a way that respects him as well, and showing that, because coaches, you know, want to be shown that respect. Otherwise, you can't get through to them. So we visualized that, had her visualize that a couple of different times. So we did that technique, and then we also did a role play where I said, okay, imagine I'll be the coach and you be you and say those things to me. And we role played it that way. So that could be another way of using visualization, where you have her visualize it and then practice it out loud, and then be able to say it and a couple of times. And I said, if you want, in the meantime, you could practice this with your friends, practice with your parents, with people you trust. and the fact that she talked to her mother about this, her parents, that motivated her parents, her mom, to actually go to the coach also in a separate meeting and talk to the coach about his behavior. So that was helpful as well. She ended up going ahead, and after doing that visualization a few times, I said, now, you know, we did an audio, of course, where she could listen to it right before she went to sleep at night, and that way she could be practicing it in her sleep as well, and get it growing more confidence. And then the next day she was able to go in and talk with him and communicate just the way that she had envisioned it through our work together, and be able to say to him, coach, I appreciate the work you're doing with the team, and, you know, do the positive part first, the sandwich technique, and then saying, I don't appreciate you yelling at me and swearing at me during the practices. I want to be treated with respect. And if you could give us more, also it's good to say, of course, how you'd like the person to change. And the standard formula, of course, you probably know, is here's what you're doing, and here's how it makes me feel, and here's how I'd like you to, here's what would be great if you could change this way, here's how I'd like you to change. So she did all those three things, and saying, giving more positive feedback and being able to hold off on all the negative comments. It would mean so much to me with my swimming performance and just feeling better as an athlete. It's going to help our team as well, you know, and that was really important for her to emphasize, not just her, but the team. And after that, he did apologize, she said, to me. And so, and that was when I it's important to ask, when they say apologize, I said, what did he say? What do you mean by apology? And she said, well, he said, I apologize that you feel that way. And I said, you're both probably cringing, Dave and Matt, which is not, that was a good teaching point that I said. I said, that's not an apology. You know, that's just a cop-out, and the apology is, you know, has three parts to it, and is saying I apologize for what I did, and then name the behavior, and then I apologize for and how I hurt you, how I made you feel, and then here's how I plan to change. He didn't do any of that. He just said, I apologize for how that you feel like that. So that was a real eye-opener for her to be able to see a learning point that realize that he didn't really apologize. But then I was able to explain to her that sometimes when you give people feedback, often coaches, they get defensive because they worry that their job might be on the line, which is true. In this case, because the mother complained and other parents were complaining, their job might be on the line. So coaches people can get defensive and not say anything or say something to try to cover it up. And so I said, but oftentimes when you speak up for yourself like this in a respectful way, people, they might not admit it, but chances are he was listening to you, and he'll go back and think about it and think about the consequences for if he continues that behavior. He might be out of a job, and it turns out that that's what happened, that he did, even though he didn't formally apologized to her. He did. She said, now he's treating me much better, and he's not yelling, and he's not swearing at me, and so it did really make a substantial change. And what's better, she said that now he's treating the whole team better. So being able to visualize that conversation that she wanted to have with him and talk it out with me and then rehearse it and then actually do the conversation, it changed the coach's behavior. So he treated her much better, and he's treating the whole team better, and not, other people said, yeah, he's not yelling at us anymore. So she was actually changing the whole culture of the team by just standing up. And so that was an example I wanted to share with you, with visualization and you know, really empowering someone to do well. And then she ended up going on and being able to, you know, practice, and her practices were such much higher quality now that she didn't have to deal with the yelling and swearing, and she was able to do well at the local championships, and then the state and the regional championships, and got on the podium there, and got to the state championships, and went much farther in her competitions than she'd ever been before. So I wanted to share that example with you first, and there's many some other examples I wanted to share with you also. But first, just get your reaction or any response to that, Matt or Dave, about that situation or anything similar that you've experienced?
Well, Dr. Joanne, I just unfortunately have dealt with this same issue with coaches and athletes, especially my younger athletes. It boils my blood, to say the least. And I commend you for staying positive and giving the athlete what's right to do in that circumstance. And in full transparency, I wanted to kind of share what I didn't do right, which in the past, I've certainly, my athletes have been able to tell how disappointed I was in the actions of the coach, but it doesn't help them in that situation. You said a very important thing in empowering, and I have to remind myself that I'm there to help them, not to add to the stress. So just by saying, wow, what an awful coach, and why does that coach even have a job, and you know, those sort of things, that's not helping. And then at the same time, you mentioned some things about how the athlete can really focus better now on what she needs to do, and then also improve the culture for her entire team, which again, you know, bullies tend to back down. And what I've noticed is I've had some athletes. I think I've handled it better in the last couple of years than I have in the past, And I realized I made a promise to one of my athletes. Her name is Alexis, and she's a Division I runner. But she's one of those people that's very special to me. So I got very emotional when she was talking about how her coach, I was her high school coach, so how her collegiate coach was treating her and talking to her. So the first session we had, or first time we, when I say session, she was in the gym training, strength training, and we're just talking about what this coach was saying to her, and it falls along the lines of eating disorders as well, where he was telling her that she was too big, you know, she was too big to be a good endurance runner, and which she actually is not, but that's a whole nother subject. And she now, that was about 2 years ago, she is now his top runner and chasing down records, and she did it her way. But I told her the next day when she came in, I still remember that, I told her, I said, I'm sorry, because yesterday all I did was add to the stress and to the problem. We didn't come up with any solution. So we started to talk more about how she could put herself more internally in her own place And so she would visualize, first of all, her, you know, why she was doing the sport, why she loved it. She would visualize herself on her favorite run, just enjoying herself. She would, her imagery would be about how she won her first state title. And in fact, Dr. Joanne, that's the athlete I used in my case study that I sent to you on pre-visualization and visualization. That's her. Yep. And so she, that exact story I sent to you is she would put that in her mind about her first huge upset, winning her first state title. Because especially in high school, she did not look like the average distance runner. And we worked very hard on being able to use that mindset to her advantage. So being more muscular than most distance runners, we learned to use that strength in her favor. And she was able to start to think about that time when her collegiate coach was basically telling her she needed to lose more weight, and she just processed in her mind about how she beat all these other girls when she wasn't supposed to, and she was going to continue to believe in her strengths, literally and figuratively. And like I say, and now not during COVID, but just before COVID, she ran one of the fastest 10,000 meter times in her school's history. So she's certainly on her way. And she did tell me, I'll finish with this, but I think it's really struck me when you were saying about affecting the rest of the team's culture, that the coach was approached by the school, the college, and they asked him, have you been telling the girls they need to diet down, and they need to, he was telling them to intermittent fast. He was telling them they couldn't eat until 6 o'clock at night. Don't eat all day. He was giving all kinds of goofy advice and just telling them they needed to get under a certain weight for a certain height. He had no expertise in this. And if he did, he wouldn't say those things. And so he denied it. But after that, he had to basically let it go, and he had to, and he stopped talking that way. And in part because of that, and the other part was because Lexi was now his fastest runner. So sort of proved him wrong after a couple of years. I don't know. That's what came to my mind. I hope I didn't go off the deep end too far there, but.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's great. Yeah. It's just good to know. Yeah. There are a lot of coaches out there like that, and it's good to be able to, offer or give feedback to the athlete about what is actually happening, and then to offer a solution or give them a way to be able to handle it. So thanks, Matt. That's great, and glad that your athlete Alexi was able to move forward and do so well, speak up too. So that's good. And Dave, did you want to have any comment or question? Or any other experiences like that?
Sure, yeah. I would kind of add on to what Matt said in regards to, you know, how often do younger people have adults model, like, responsible, like, empathetic, compassionate behavior, especially kind of on the coaching front. It can seem a bit transactional at times, but I appreciate what Matt said about, you know, kind of owning his stuff, you know, kind of in the therapy field of like counter transference and feelings and, you know, the power of that, just being aware that every time you're interacting with that kid, you're having an emotional impact on them as well. And if you can take some ownership on that, you can really help a kid move forward, and then they'll know what that's like, you know, like, oh, you know, Matt did that for me. He gets it, right? This person over here who's coaching me, I want them to get it too. How can I get to that part? Right. How can I have that play out for me here? I think the role plays are just an excellent way to do that too.
Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah, to be able to take ownership and admit when you've done something that wasn't quite what you wanted, and that's and then be able to make that better. That can really be great modeling for an athlete, too, to see that, wow, somebody can actually, because coaches rarely do that. They don't admit that they're wrong or that they've made a mistake or something. So it's nice to be able to do that for your athletes also. So I want to give some other examples, too, of where you can use visualization to help an athlete with, for instance, there's a woman, Shannon, that I worked with in San Francisco who, was at the London, worked with her here in San Francisco and then on site at the London Olympics. And that was an example of where you can you work with an athlete and then with their permission be able to do something with the media also. At the time, NBC TV contacted me because they're, of course, covering the Olympics, the NBC National, and then the local NBC TV wanted to interview me about my work with athletes at the Olympics, and I was working with Shannon, so we 1500 meter runner on the track, and then 5000 meter runner as well, and so we were working together, so we were able to NBC had me go to her home there, and she agreed to do a practice visualization session and talk about how our work together in preparation for the London Olympics. And then we went, then I traveled there to the London Olympics and worked with Shannon there as well. And so then the NBC was able to interview us there on site at the Olympics also about how we used visualization and mental training to help her prepare. And so that's, on my website, or I can send you the link for that to the piece that NBC did. And it shows us, doing a visualization session at her home there in San Francisco preparing. And so what we did was, an example is when Shannon said that when she's on the track, in the 1500 meters, you don't get your own lane like you do with 100 meters or 400 meters. So sometimes it can be a real battle out there. It can be more like a contact sport. And so you're just all lined up on the track. And then as soon as the gun goes off, everybody tries to go for the inside lane, and it can be crazy. Sometimes people end up getting tripped and fall down. And I'm sure Matt and Dave, you've seen that or had that experience too with athletes. And so she was concerned about that, getting blocked in or getting stuck in a spot where feeling trapped on the track there, where she's kind of in a bunch of people and she can't get out and around to be able to pass people to move forward. So I asked her, what kind of let's talk about how animals do it. Think of an animal that embodies has the characteristics that you want to have here. And she thought, I want to be a tiger, or I think a tiger would be really good. They're strong and fierce and really focused. And so we talked about that, and I said, let's go on to YouTube first. And I made that her homework and look up tigers and tiger going for their prey, and the look of focus in their eyes, absolute, total, no distractions whatsoever. It's just like, I'm going for dinner right over there. There's nothing going to stop me. That kind of look in the eye. And so we talked about that and just talked about how she could be the tiger and visualize that. So I did some visualizations around her being, she'd even say grr and make the sounds of a tiger and be really strong that way and be able to kind of get out of her own personality for a moment and get into the tiger's personality and be able to feel really strong and totally focused, like that's the only thing that matters, and so be able to hold her ground, because it's a delicate balance of how, you know, you can use your elbows to kind of create your space. And so she did that. Then when she got to London, was able to hold her space there and be assertive without getting, and, you know, avoid getting knocked over, and to be able to move around people just by imagining that tiger and saying, I am the tiger, you know, just not just picturing a tiger now, but really internalizing that and seeing herself as that fierce, strong, focused animal. So that's another example. And then she ended up doing, you know, well in the Olympics there. And so that animal, I guess you would call it animal visualization or animal imagery, helped her to get through that. Another example I wanted to give was a woman named Jana that was an aerial skier I worked with at the Olympics. She went to the Torino Olympics, Winter Olympics, and then the Vancouver Winter Olympics in 2010. And at the Torino Olympics, before that, she was in the Olympic trials. And aerial skiing, of course, is, for those that might not know, it's the type of skiing where you go up on this ramp and then you do the flips in the air, one or two flips and turns and spins, all kinds of tricks, and then you hopefully come down and land on your feet below. And so it's just a very quick exercise, and your whole event may only take a few seconds just to go down. But the ramp that they go, that brings them up, you know, brings them straight up into the air, and they do have to do their trick very quickly and then come down. So she practiced and was very well prepared. But then at the Olympic trials, it was at nighttime, and she got disoriented. There was some wind as well, and she ended up losing her orientation in the air, came down and landed on her head and got a concussion, and was in the hospital. So she, after that, they took the first person from the trials to go to the Olympics, but she got a call when she was in the hospital that they said, hey, you made the Olympic team based on your congratulations, get well soon, kind of thing. And she, that was based on her points, accumulated points from the World Cup throughout the year. That's how they chose the second person. And so the Olympic team decided that she would be able to make the team anyway. And so here she is in the hospital and gets this great news, but obviously she's having to recover from her neck and concussion. So I worked with her while she was in the hospital and doing visualizations and being able to. Fortunately, she didn't have too much memory of the fall, because when she got the concussion, that wiped out the memory of that event. But she knows that something happened there, and so, you know, there's obviously this fear of being able to get back and up and doing this very dangerous sport. And she only had about 4 weeks to recover before the Olympics. So we worked together. It was kind of like emergency sports psychology. And I think that's sometimes that's what we're doing, is emergency sports psychology with being able to help someone recover from something, in this case, a really traumatic. She could have, a lot worse things could have happened. Fortunately, she was able to recover physically. Concussions are something that, you know, it really depends on the situation. The outcomes can be very different depending on the person and the situation. But she was able to recover, and so physically, and as she's recovering physically, I'm helping her recover mentally. and being able to just create a new movie in her mind about doing, you know, instead of having a memory of falling or messing up, we kept reinforcing the memories of doing her best and her best jumps and playing, being playful and having fun and just enjoying jumping and getting back to why, asking why you got into the sport initially and what's fun about it and making it easy and just creating this kind of spirit of what a joy, what a great thing to be able to be in a sport like this that very few people can do. She gets to, it's like gymnastics, basically, you know, gymnastics in the air, and getting to get selected for the Olympic team now based on, because she had earned that through all of her performances at the World Cup Series. So she gets to, you know, what a miracle, basically, that she gets selected for the team, even though she fell at the trial. So we talked about how she could just keep moving forward instead of focusing on that past event, move forward and look to how she can do her best and have fun in Torino. Maybe at this point not have any expectations, just to be able to of how she would place or anything, but just be able to go and participate is a wonderful thing. So we visualized that, just, you know, focusing on the best runs that she's had and the good what she likes about the sport, and she was able to then go to Torino and do get in the top 10 there, and be able to put that behind her, the events of the concussion, and be able to recover okay, amazingly, and just do something that's, it would be really easy to just fall into a fear and anxiety, but she was able to climb out of that and say, wow, see it as an opportunity. Here I get to go in a dramatic way, be able to recover from this dramatic fall and go ahead with the Torino. And then the next Olympics were in Vancouver, and I was able to go there as well and talk with her, work with her there. So with this, and there she was okay, no falls, and just being able to perform well. So just an example of how to help an athlete recover from something really difficult in a really dangerous kind of sport. So those are a couple examples of athletes that I've worked with. One other one I want to mention is Stacy Dragila. I worked with in the pole vault and at the Olympics. I worked with her in Greece. Actually went there to Athens, Greece, for the 2004 Olympics. She had gotten the Olympic gold medal 4 years before that at the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, and now there was all these expectations, of course, you know, being the reigning Olympic gold medalist, to be able to perform well and to repeat that at in Greece. And so yeah, I worked with her beforehand here by phone first with visualization sessions, and then there traveled there with her to Greece and worked with her actually at the Olympic Training Center there in Athens. And the way I would work with her there is to, she invited me to come to the training center they had there, Olympic Training Center at one of the colleges that they established, and she had her coach there. So I would sit on the sidelines and then watch her practice. And her coach is on the opposite side, giving her instructions, giving her cues, giving her feedback. I could hear his feedback. So I'd be just taking notes and writing things down and just being quiet during their practice session, but just observing and noticed different things, and just wrote down my what I saw happening and how the coach was communicating with her. And it was a great opportunity to be able to kind of listen in and watch how she practices, and then afterward we would do. So she had her physical training there, and then afterward I'd meet with Stacy, and then we'd do a private visualization session or just a coaching session, just one on one, and we'd just allow her to debrief and talk about how the training went that day and what she was, and the cues that her coach gave her about, things like when you're up in the air, focus on your on your right hand, focus on the hand on the, is further down on the pole. A lot of technical terms in pole vaulting that I had to learn. But we talked about see the bar lower than it really is. I mean, that's a really good metaphor that a lot of athletes can use in anything in life. She would try to, right when she was starting her approach, she would look at the bar, up above that she's going to try to clear, go over, and she would try to see it lower than it really is, so that it seemed more doable for her. So that was something we put into the coach told her that, and then she wanted to use that, and we used that in the visualization session. And it's interesting, afterward we'd talk about how her coaching went while she's in rehab there. One of the rehab things they did was put her, I've got a picture somewhere of her with in a garbage can. They would fill the garbage can with ice, and then the athlete, they could just stand outside and be able to be in this garbage can filled with ice. That's how they did their icing. So I'd be talking with her while she's in the garbage can with ice, and being able to recover, and so she's doing her physical rehab while we're doing her mental rehab. We just talked about that, seeing the bar lower than it really is. And then we do a visualization with slowing down her movement. So in the pole vault, things have to happen very quickly, and she's got to have this whole series of things that happen with the approach and then planting the pole and then getting rocketed into the air and your body goes into the C position and comes down. And so I would have her describe all that step by step. And she said she'd never done that before, actually talked it out with somebody, all the different steps that she goes through. So doing that helped her to kind of articulate what it is that she actually does with the pole vault. And then during the visualization, we would go through all those steps one by one, and she remarked that it was the first time she'd ever been able to slow it down in her mind. So that's the nice thing about visualization. You can, it's like a slow-mo video. You can make it the regular speed, or you can do a slow-mo, slow-motion video in your mind, a movie of what you're doing, and be able to, so she, being able to slow it down in her mind, she said it helped her to see all the parts and then see all the parts coming together. So she felt good about that. And then she could do, like playing the piano, when you want to learn a new part, you do the left hand slowly, you do the right hand slowly several times back and forth and getting those down, and then you put both hands together slowly, and then you slowly speed it up to the normal speed that some musicians learn to play. And same thing with athletes. Of course, here, she's at the highest level. She's not just learning a new skill, but she said even at that highest level, just being able to slow it down helped her to see that, like in one part, like when she's up in the air, she said, I need to be pressing down on my right hand more, focusing on that. And she could see little parts that she could so make little tweaks on. She could, it's almost like putting a spotlight on those different parts of the movement so that she could see it more clearly. And then able to then put it together, and just like the piano player, she could do it in slow motion several times, spotlight different areas of the jump that she wanted to highlight in her mind and work on different techniques, and then be able to put it all together and gradually then see it in slow motion, then see it in medium, and then see it in regular, normal pace that she would do. And so play that over and over in her mind. And the more, yeah, we talked about how you, once you play it in your mind several times, then you can see it, it starts to crystallize. So you, and you are actually creating neuromuscular responses when you are visualizing. So you're, it's just like you're doing the physical practice is important, but then the mental practice reinforces that afterwards. So good to do both, so that the next time she does the physical practice the next day, she is able to do, put that all together and be even stronger. So that was an example of working with Stacy on site at the Olympics there. And also just, you know, when you're working with someone at a high level like that, helping them deal with the pressure of the media and being able to, you know, she invited me to the Nike press conference there, which was amazing to be able to talk with her and to see the, and then she was supposed to, she did an interview there on the stage. They had athletes talk about their sport and just to see, you know, the kind of pressure that athletes have to deal with there. You know, all the famous athletes were there, Carl Lewis, and athletes from the past were at this Nike press conference. And so it was just exciting to be able to be part of that and see how she could really, you know, we talked about different questions she might get from the press and how to handle those and how to be able to, if you could take a few deep breaths once you get a question, if you're not sure, and then just think about how to respond to it, or if there's something you're not comfortable with, just give a minimal answer. It's always okay to say, I think I'll wait on giving a response on that, or let me think about that and get back to you. It's okay to be able to delay a response too, so that you can, because, you know, whatever you say is in the media, so it's more important to, you know, help athletes to take in some deep breaths and consider what they're saying. Just like you said, Matt, with this athlete that was giving, you know, responses about the George Floyd situation, that's, you know, really, once you make a statement like that that's not in your interest or not in the public interest, it goes everywhere. Everything goes viral these days, so it's not, so you need to be careful about what you say, and especially right before a competition like the Olympics, it's much better to not be really controversial, not do something that's going to say something that's going to get everybody all upset, because you're going to hear about it and that's going to distract from your performance. So it's, and the media love that. They love controversy. So it's much better to stay on task, and that you teach the athlete to take control of the interview, like, to be able to, and so we would do some visualizations around that too, how she could be really confident and strong, and have her take control of the interview rather than the media person be able to decide what she answers and how she answers things. So, yeah, so that's an example of working with top-level athletes at the Olympics there. And, yeah, I have so many different examples I want to share. We can do some more next time, too. But just want to get your response to any of those situations or questions that you have. Dave or Matt, just check in with you.
I'll go real quick first here, but you know, first of all, I've been rapidly writing notes, but one of the things I love every time that you give your stories, and I always pick up at least one sort of cue that I think works for my my athletes, but I wrote down visualize to crystallize as far as you know, getting that in tune with your neuromuscular system. And so I just love it when I can say something simple like that, that my athletes can kind of buy into quickly, and it kind of fits well. But that's something you brought up in your story that I thought, oh wow, I've never heard it that way. That's great. So I'm going to use that.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Matt. Yeah, it's good to have something like that visualized to crystallize and really internalize it in your neurological system. Yeah, that's great.
I'm also jealous. I'm also jealous that you've been to so many Olympics. I hope one day to be able to swap some stories with you. But for now, I'll just live vicariously through you.
Oh, thank you. That warms my heart. Yeah, it's so cool to be able to do that, and it's just it's good to be able to take advantage of that when the opportunities when they come, and you never know. Just staying in touch with, say, chiropractors, often work with Olympians, and so if you have a chiropractor, you can. That you work with, or a sports medicine person, you can ask them if they're working with athletes and offer your help. And with Olympians, often I'll just offer to work with them complimentary for the Olympics, because it's just a special time, and a lot of athletes don't have the funds to pay for services. But it's a good chance to be able to work with people at that high level. So, and then other ways are to go to sports events, and get a media pass, and then I'll be able to talk with the athletes there as a media person, and offer to be able to do a visualization for them, or coaching, or those kind of things are really great, too. So, and then you can just reach out to the media and say that you're an expert on sports psychology, and that you can do an interview with them. So all that is possible too, but lots of different ways. But it's good to work with athletes at any level, and you never know an athlete that you are working with that you might think is at a lower level. Oftentimes they rise up to become an Olympian or professional athlete, and you could be following them and working with them the whole time. So, yeah, great.
I do want to say, I actually do have my first, I've had a couple athletes go to the Olympic trials, but my first athlete is going to go to the Olympics for basketball, but she has a dual citizenship in U.S. and France. So she's going to be playing for France, but I'm going to be there. So I'm excited, I'm actually training her right now to get ready. She's leaving in about a month to meet up with the team in France.
Wow, that's exciting!
Nice.
Congratulations, Matt. That is so cool. Yeah, so they've selected the team already, because of course we know the Olympics have been postponed right till next summer. But they've already got the team selected. That's good.
Such a rare privilege, but I've been training her since she was 15 years old, so it's been quite a journey. So about 10 years together we've been working together now, and she's a professional basketball player. She played for UConn before this, and anyways I don't want to take up the conversation, but yeah, I'll get my first Olympic experience as a coach coming up here, and we are definitely using your visualization principles. I actually went through all that stuff with her last week when she came into town, and she's absolutely loving it. She's like, I didn't even know you did this stuff, coach. And I'm like, well, I do now. And so it's been a lot of fun, and you've made a big difference. I'm not just saying that. Like, she's said, wow, you really stepped up the mental game, coach. I love it. And so she's really excited about just this additional edge that she that she's attaining through through our talks too. And so, yeah, thank you for that too, by the way.
Okay, that's wonderful. Congratulations, Matt. Yeah, being able to go work with someone to the Olympics for next year, that's exciting. Gives me goosebumps. So great. Yeah, and Dave, are you still there? Yeah, any comments? About the athletes you talked about, or anything?
Absolutely. Just the piece around, you know, the slow-mo kind of each step and then kind of breaking that up into pieces. You know, like I look back on my career, like my athletic career, the things I've done, I'm sure I've done versions of that. In fact, early on, I think I did, like, the wrong thing, like imagining all the mistakes that could happen and how I could repair that. Versus just kind of imagining how, you know, step by step I would do it properly. So that was helpful to me. And then the second part about the runner kind of jockeying for position in the 1500. I've been watching a lot of YouTube, like running videos, long distance, stuff like that, really getting into it. And just kind of watching like the looks on their faces, the mindset. And, you know, you can really tell the one, like there's some people are real loose there. And I'm like, that person was practically smiling when they went over, you know, across the finish line, right? Like looking left and right. It's like that level of relaxation while other people are just straining. And it just tells me that person is using those techniques. There's got to be something there. So I'm just really mindful of that now.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. Yeah, it's good to, that's a nice thing. If there's not maybe any sports going on right now, there's always, thank goodness for YouTube and any video like that. You can learn, continue to learn from what's already out there, what athletes have been through, and we can always, you know, just be creating new kinds of techniques for us to work with athletes in the future, and you know, and imagining the future with visualization, you know, imagine what, you know, because it's a tendency with the pandemic to think, how long is this going to last? We're stuck in this thing of the lockdown. But, you know, with visualization, it's like mind travel, time travel. You can go anywhere you want and you can go into the future. And so imagining what what athletes you'd like to work with and what types of situations you want to deal with, and imagine what type of performing edge coach you'd like to be and how you can improve your own technique as a sports psychology coach, and imagining the kinds of athletes that you want to work with, as they can, which if you imagine those, then you're going to tend to attract those kinds of people, athletes, into your practice. So imagine kind of your ideal athlete that you want to work with, and then be able to see those situations where they can kind of come into your life, into your practice. So great, thank you. And if you can add anything to kind of our takeaways here, what specific technique or anything else that you want to add for. Things that you learned today or any specific examples, case studies that you found helpful here that you can use in the future. And then we'll have our next call on the June 25th, the fourth Thursday, so you can put that on your calendar. So any takeaways that you could add, Matt or Dave, things that you want to remember from this, nuggets that were helpful?
So I would just say your work with the swimmer that has impacted me just as far as coaches and how to respond to them. I think that's impactful. You know, I always appreciate having Matt on the call too. I'm a fan. Feel like just the more examples I hear from, you know, all the coaches is really helpful to me. So I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm just, as we come out of COVID and things really pick up, I mean, I just really want to get this thing cooking. you know, it's like, I do not like excuses. I don't like things that get in the way, but man, I really just need to have a little more like face-to-face contact with people. So I'm just crossing my fingers we'll come through this a little quicker.
Yeah, exactly. And if there's any way to, sometimes I know some people are doing, outdoor, anything you could do outdoors is safer. Of course, if there's a way to meet with athletes, outdoors, go for a walk and talk kind of thing. Some people are doing that with, sessions, since it's maybe tough to meet inside, to be able to go outside with, athletes to walk with them, or if you have a front yard or backyard to meet there, that's good, or meet some place, get coffee and walk down the street to a park. You know, people are getting really creative these days with visualizing, with meeting with athletes in creative ways. So, yeah, so that's good. All right, thanks, Dave. And Matt, are you still there? Any takeaways that you want to add?
Oh, yeah, I just would say, first of all, thank you, Dave, for that as well. I appreciate that. But I would say just along the lines of Dr. Joanne was talking about using chiropractors or people she knows there and getting some connections with athletes that way. And so, Dave, just for what it's worth, that's sort of been always my advice too, is I went and worked with local physical therapists in the area, manual therapists, chiropractors, and I actually just volunteered, my time and any help I could give them to serve their clients. And, it wasn't long before I just had gained their trust. And then I was getting a lot of referrals, from them, from their athletes. And so, it's just about serving others. And then, I really think, you sound very genuine, the conversations we've already had. And I think that comes through, and, you're willing to, especially if you're willing to put in your time to help other athletes, the other, coaches and professionals that are working with that athlete, they'll appreciate that and they'll trust you. But it just, a lot of times people, they just want to like be in the loop, but they didn't do anything to get in the loop. And so like, well, why should I trust you? So I just like what Joanne said about using, like getting to know the chiropractor and gaining trust with these other coaches that, will essentially be referring you a lot of your business. That's probably how I still get the majority of my business, is just through direct referrals.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Great. Thanks, Matt. Yeah, and thanks, Dave. And yeah, that's how I've gotten the referrals for the some of the Olympic athletes I worked with, is that I went in. If you have any issues yourself, like with issue with my leg, with my legs, to with wanting some work with chiropractor and back and neck and that sort of thing. So I went as a patient, and then talked about my work there, and so able to get then they keep you in mind and think to refer people to you. So yeah, so that's great. So thank you so much, everyone, for your calls and people listening in as well from our certification program. So thanks so much, and I'll talk to you soon. And congratulations to Matt and to Dave on getting certified, and I'll talk with you on our next call here, which is June the 25th. And if you have any questions in the meantime, you can just email me, or any suggestions you have for topics that you'd like me to cover, that'd be great. I can always happy to include those on our calls. So yeah, just want to wish everyone a great day, and keep breathing, keep visualizing. Uh-huh. We can practice what we're teaching our athletes. We can do ourselves too. Keep imagining the kind of practice that you want and future you want, and writing those down, doing journaling as well. And then it will happen. Yeah, attract those kind of athletes that you want. So great. Well, thank you. Great chatting with all of you. And yeah, we'll have a great week, and we'll talk on the 25th, and I'll send you the replay shortly here and my notes too. So thank you, and we'll talk next time. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. See you, Matt.
Bye.
Bye-bye.